It's hard to imagine a world without music. For over 35,000 years, music has contributed to culture and enhanced our life on Earth. I'm Robin Applewood, producer, musician, DJ, sound engineer, and promoter with over 20 years of experience in the business. I interview other professionals from the Bay Area music scene and beyond. Meet the extraordinary humans that make up this intricate and robust industry. The talented and creative humans that hustle day in and day out to bring sounds to our earbuds and produce the live music experiences that become some of the best moments of our lives.
All right, I'm currently here with the production manager of Longboards, a venue in Pacifica, California. He's also the previous booker at Neck of the Woods, Rocket Room, and Pier 23. Band member of Native Elements and a producer slash multi-instrumentalist. All right, let's cue that applause track and welcome Benjamin Thompson. Hey, what's up, man?
How's it going?
It's going all right. It's good to be talking to you.
Right on. You too, man.
You do a lot of things.
Well, not so much these days. I think I'm keeping up with the times by not doing hardly anything at all.
Wow. You must be good at that.
You know. Yeah. But trying to keep as busy as we can, you know. Despite not having any attended shows, we're still doing live streams and whatnot. You know, at least it's keeping music out there.
Yeah, so let's dive right into that then. So the live streaming, because I think, you know, that's something I haven't really touched on so much on the podcast yet, and a lot of people have kind of been asking about it. So I'm really happy to have you here to hear about what you're doing and how it's helping artists and the venue that you're working with. And enlighten us, please.
Well, we were relatively fortunate that we've actually been live streaming from Longboards for a few years before COVID. So we were pretty much set up to go. When the pandemic hit and we had to close, we were able to still, we got permission actually from the county to still do live stream events, even though the venue is closed. And we added a pay-per-view platform to the service. So bands could come in and run it as a pay-per-view event, or we let them do it for free if they prefer. We really try to leave it up to the artists, you know, whatever they're comfortable with.
Well, that's super cool. And what's the company called again?
It's a How Live.
How Live.
H-O-W-L-I-V-E. Yeah.
Right on. And so, all right, let's say I'm, a band and I'm interested in getting involved with this, but I also, you know, have some kind of like, what are some of the FAQs like that bands have and what are your answers to those?
Oh, it's varied a lot. It has changed throughout the pandemic quite a bit too, as bands start getting used to doing stuff like this. Let's see. A definite frequent question is, do you own your video? And the answer is yes, you own your video. That's something that's very important to bands and artists, I believe. So you walk out the door with your video. We keep it up on our site at all. And like, say you're doing a pay-per-view, it will be up as a pay-per-view beyond the actual time of the event. So people can still purchase the pay-per-view after the event occurs. Or you can tell us to turn the pay-per-view aspect off and it will just be on the site for free. So you can always refer people to HowLive to watch your video.
Cool.
And you'll receive a download link yourself.
Oh, right on. Yeah. And so that's one of the questions. Well, so far, what has the reaction been from bands that have done it? And, I've seen a couple of the videos. They're super high quality. It's really impressive. And I think that's definitely a selling point. And so, like, what have some of the bands been saying that have done them so far and some of the positives, takeaways?
Yeah, the feedback has been very positive. You know, I think people are just excited to get out there and play, you know, it's funny when we get these bands in there, artists in there that have never done anything like this before. It's really awkward, you know, trying to perform and be yourself in front of nobody, you know, it's an awkward thing. So I always try to keep it going with them. If I'm doing sound myself, engineering the show, you know, try to get a little banter going in between songs and whatnot, just to make them feel more comfortable. You know, it's something that It's something you never think about.
You haven't gotten into doing the cardboard cutouts like the baseball games?
No, not yet.
Some girl taking a bra off and throwing it on stage, cardboard cutout.
Oh, we did have one band bring in dancers.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And the lead singer was very adamant. He's like, I'm paying these dancers a lot of money, and I want them to be on the screen more than me.
Uh-huh. So, hey. That's one way to do it.
Yeah.
And so how does the pay structure work for everyone?
Well, we always let you set the pay-per-view price for yourself. Whatever, you know your audience better than we do.
Mm-hmm.
So you set your own pay-per-view price. How Live does take a little bit off the top, but what we had been doing was taking $2.50 off the top of the first 50 purchases, and $1.50 off of every purchase thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really put a percentage on that, because the percentage depends on what you want to charge. You could charge $100 per view, and we're still only taking $1.50 after 50. So.
Seems reasonable.
You know, try to make it as fair as we can to the artists, with also being able to support, you know, the staff that's there doing the production.
Right.
But we, you know, it's not a profitable thing at this point.
Mm-hmm.
There's been very few where we've actually made enough money to cover even our own costs.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, it is a labor of love. We're trying to build the business. You know, the hardest time any of us have ever gone through in this industry.
Right.
And it's more rewarding just to, like, you know, see these bands. They're so thankful when they come in and play and see their video and mm-hmm. the quality of it. You know, that makes it more worth it. It makes it feel like you're doing something good during these times.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, to even feel like there's something happening beyond just, you know, sitting around watching sitcoms, you know, like to actually mm-hmm. have an opportunity yep. to play, like you were saying, even if it's awkward and an empty room with cameras and you're kind of looking off into space, like, I know people are watching out there, because I always have a cathartic experience when I'm doing those the live streams. Mm-hmm. But I hear they've been working for some people, and and at least what with you, you get this like super high quality, which is awesome. And you're in a venue, and you get that benefit of being in a venue.
Yeah. And we do have the ability. There's a chat feature during each stream, so we do have the ability to also set up a monitor so that the bands can monitor the chat that's going on, and that's kind of fun, because that way it makes it a little bit interactive.
Right.
Some bands have like put out on their Facebooks. Like a song list, like, you know, they're not going to be able to play all these songs, but it's like, vote for your favorite song, and, you know, get that kind of interaction with their crowd going in real time. That's kind of fun.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. This all to me is, it feels so like awkward.
Yeah.
you know, someone who's kind of, we've all been playing this in a certain way our whole lives. So to kind of like reformat it is definitely like, it's kind of an awkward phase. But do you see this as something that will like continue on past the pandemic, like, or do you think it's just a temporary situation, you know, until we get back to whatever normal looks like?
Well, it's interesting for us at Longboards, we've been doing this since before the pandemic,
right?
Not as pay-per-views, but every single show we've had out of there for the last few years has been streamed already. And now that, you know, the pandemic has occurred, we've actually got the How Live system into several venues throughout the Bay Area. It's funny, because, you know, we've been trying to do that for the last few years, and there wasn't really that many takers. Mm-hmm. And we've done more since the pandemic has started than we have in the years leading up to it. So I don't see with the investment that these venues are putting into this type of thing right now, I don't see it going away even after they open up.
Uh-huh.
And it still leads to other opportunities for venues to offer other services that they were never offering before.
Right. So you're just going to be doing what you've always been doing, and hopefully the room starts to fill up as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And it definitely sounds better when there's people in there too.
I can imagine. Yeah. Well, on that note, like, you're kind of a multi, you know, wear a lot of hats like I do. I mean, we've known each other for a long time. We've kind of, we were just reminiscing, like touring in France, and you, mm-hmm. and you produced my first album, and, you know, it's just been a rich history working with you. And so I wanted to kind of find out also from you, you know, you're also in a band and you also produce, and then you were a booker. And so, like, how have you pivoted in those ways? Or are you just kind of fully focused on the live streaming?
Well, I, even within the live streaming, I only run the audio portion. We, so that for me has it, and mixing for a live stream specifically has been a learning curve. It's much different than mixing when there's 400 people in
imagine.
That room.
Yeah.
And the challenges that you never think of before trying to do something like this, like just simply monitoring it back in a room, like it's there's really no good way to do it.
Yeah.
So a lot of times we'll record a little bit beforehand, and then I will literally have to like go outside on my phone in my earphones and listen to it to see how it sounds, because there's no way to hear it in the room, even with headphones on,
right.
like, just because of the ambient noise. You know? So that's been very challenging. I've gotten better at it, I hope. There's definitely a curve.
Well, it kind of reminds me of when I have to set up an aux mix for a band, like, you know, playing live, and you know, mm-hmm. they're like, can you just do an aux mix? I'm like, yeah, like I'll try my best, but you're just kind of like shooting in the dark,
because right, yeah.
you just have no yep. idea what it is going to sound like, and you have to commit to yeah. to whatever that mix is. So yeah, that's funny. I didn't really think about that, but
you would never think about it until now,
right? Yeah. And do you have to like change any settings to like compensate for anything, like any loss of audio quality through Wi-Fi? Like, do you have to like boost the high end to like translate?
Oh no,
better.
Or not, is it not at
pretty
all.
Pretty accurate.
It's very accurate. Yeah, I mean if. At Longboards in particular, and I'm sure most venues are doing the same thing, they're mixing. We're mixing a feed from the board along with two room mics. So you know, getting that balance in there is a little challenging, and it really depends on the bands too.
Right.
You know, a solo acoustic artist compared to, you know, a band, a 5-10 piece band up there with horns and everything is a huge difference, more so now than it was before.
Right. And so do they get multi-track audio afterwards, or is it just, are they also getting just the stereo mix?
It's just the stereo mix.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we do have we can do it, you know, that's mm-hmm. not a problem. We can just multi-track out of the board. But, you know, then again, you're running into the same problem that a lot of people run into when they try to do that. The board mix is not accurate.
Right.
The board mix is what it is to make it sound right in there, but it's, you know, without that room in there as well, it's not going to sound that great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. So have you been doing any producing or playing music at all, like any of that other stuff?
Well, with Native Elements, we did our first live stream from Longboards when we first started the mm-hmm. service. We were the first ones to do it. I just wanted to use my own band as the guinea pig in case anything went wrong. No one would yell at me. We did one a few weeks after. That was way back in May we did that. And then we did another one a few weeks later at a Hyde Street Studios. That was a lot of fun. And we've done two. We've busked out on the pier twice.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That actually turned out to be a lot of fun, too.
With your jazz, band?
No, with Native Elements.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Cool. And I mean, it's the reaction to, you know, people haven't seen live music in such a long time. And, you know, we're a relatively big band in numbers. You know, there was eight of us out there playing. So, you know, people haven't seen that in quite a while.
Right. Yeah. What do you think, what do you think is going to happen to venue? I mean, it's like no one has a crystal ball right now, but do you have any idea, like, what venues are going to look like, you know, in 6 months? Or do you imagine you guys are going to be opening up to indoor at some capacity soon, or is that just something that's no one knows?
I would hope so. We're very fortunate in our location, and I do think this is going to be a situation that's specific to venues because of their situations, their locations. We have a full parking lot mm-hmm. that, at our disposal, plus an outdoor patio and food and drinks. Mm-hmm. So right now they're open for outdoor dining and drinking.
Okay.
So when people come in and do streams, I can roll a TV monitor out there and people can actually view it. It's, you know, they're not inside playing in front of anybody, but even that makes a big difference in the you know, the way the bands think, knowing that there's someone right over there watching them.
Yeah, that does make a big difference.
Yep.
Yeah. What do you think? What are some of the learning lessons and takeaways of this time? And do you think that there are any ways that we can all kind of like work together in the future to make things better? Like, are there some improvements that can be made to tweak the system coming back into it?
Well, I think there's always improvements that can be made, without a doubt. I think this is kind of like it's making so that venues and venue owners specifically show their true colors.
Right.
Do they know what they're doing or not?
Right.
Is being really put out on display right now for everyone to see. typically, you know, the owners who don't know what they're doing and run a poor business are not going to make it through this.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are the ones you don't want to play for anyway. as a musician myself, you know. On the flip side of that, the ones who are having to think outside the box just to keep things going right now are finding new ways to make some money, make some profit, and keep music alive.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, those are two extremes right there. And to be on the good side of that is going to be very beneficial, because while it is sad to see so many venues, you know, even before the pandemic, we lost a lot of venues here in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah.
But it provides more of a boon for the ones who are doing it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And the, you know, who care about the venue, there being a venue and taking care of bands and artists properly.
And do you think that that's what separates a successful venue from the rest?
For the most part, yes. I mean, there's plenty of places that, you know, thrive in spite of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Location sometimes dictates that, or simply being the only venue somewhere of a certain capacity, where, you know, it just makes sense for bands to route through that venue in that area. You know, you don't even have to be that good. You just have to be open.
Right. Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I figured like a lot of the reasons why venues were closing was just the crazy rent prices and kind of like the changing demographics of the city. It's not as many like music venue goers, more like kind of restaurant people. And that's what I have always attributed it to. But I, you know, as someone who's had a lot of experience in venues, I have seen also what you're talking about, where if somewhere, you know, reputation is so important in these scenes, mm-hmm. and people aren't going to really support you if they keep hearing bad things about how you're treating your patrons, your bands, et cetera. But that actually kind of brings me to a good question that one of my friends wanted me to ask. So this is my first time I'm fielding questions online, and this is a question from Michael Starita, and he says, "What role have local city and state governments played in your experience operating venues? An ally and supportive to venues and the arts, or more of an obstacle to success pre-pandemic/during the pandemic?"
Hmm. Well, I've had experiences on both ends of that, where I've had to deal with local government, police, whatnot, and they've been incredibly bad to deal with, not helpful at all. And then I've dealt with city council members that have totally been supportive.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it depends on the times, the overall tone of the city and where it's going. You look all over and you hear the horror stories, like somebody moved in on top of a music venue and then started complaining about noise. And you know, venues have been shut down for stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there's a lot of stories like the government, the city should have had the businesses back and just didn't, you know, made operating so restrictive that they could not operate as they should be. Mm-hmm. But when they do get involved in a positive way, it's very productive. You know, who first of all, who doesn't want that press?
Sure.
As a venue?
Yeah.
That's great. And you know, and it politics are politics, and it and the venue can make a politician look good too. Mm-hmm. I've seen that here in the city with several supervisors.
How did that happen?
I actually, well, back when I was working at Rocket Room, I had a particular incident with a booking in which it upset a particular community. Mm-hmm. And instead of just backing down, I was able to facilitate a meeting between the artist management, and leaders of that community in the city here that came to an agreement, and it ended up being a very, very positive thing and something I'm myself, I'm the most proud of I've ever done in booking was accomplishing this.
Right.
And ironically, my own supervisor in the district where the venue was had zero to do with making this happen. I had to go outside of my district and find a supervisor that, you know, was willing to make it happen for me. Uh-huh. to come in and see it. And he had nothing to gain, really. It made for a good story in the end, but it happened outside of his own district. That's sad. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a very interesting and trying time.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot from it too. It made me never vote for that dude ever again.
Uh-huh.
He went on to get made fun of by Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart separately.
Oh, damn.
So that made me feel good.
That's some vengeance right there. Well, if you could wave your magic wand and facilitate something between venues and musicians in the city right now,
mm-hmm.
What would that look like?
That's a tough one. I would say that, you know, are you familiar with the jam permit that the city put out?
Mm-mm.
So like basically, I don't really know anyone who actually signed up for it, but it was a way for them to try to like get venues to get permits for outdoor concerts.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
Or even just buskers really were supposed to do it too.
Right. But there was like no singing or something.
Yeah, it was like, who is making these rules?
Yeah.
Like, do you know how a horn works?
Uh-huh.
It's incredible. And I think this also applies to venues as well. Let people make decisions who know what they're doing. If you don't know, step back and let someone do it for you.
Right.
As it's not been helpful during this time. You know, we're creating our own ways to make it happen instead of this, you know, instead of working with the city or with a lot of venues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were lucky in Pacifica, San Mateo County, compared to the city, in that we've been able to be open a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, even in limited capacity and outdoor only, but you just don't you don't see it in the city like I would expect. And I think a lot of the venues, you know, even just little bars that have music, are probably afraid to do anything right now.
Yeah.
You know, just of the not just what can happen to them from the city, but people telling on each other all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, even if you're doing the right thing, trying to do it right, you're gonna upset somebody.
Yeah. And has there been any kind of like rent freeze or has there been like financial support from the city? Because I know there has been like federal money. And even that, like from what I heard from some of my friends who own venues, said it's been really hard to get.
Yes, I know at Longboards, it's a county. There were two county grants, I believe, that the owner applied for. And she got pushed back on one of them till the next round. And I think that one should be coming out this month. But yeah, there's definitely several national, state, and county, local county. And these aren't loans. I'm just talking grants here.
Right.
You know, nothing that you have to pay back.
Yeah.
There's a lot that you can apply for. How long it takes and whether they go through is another question for sure.
Yeah. Because the PPP is basically just to cover your employees, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that goes a long way because that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these, you know, venues, this whole industry, you know, has thousands of people from all different, you know, from bartenders to lighting engineers to sound engineers and bookers and there's a lot of jobs. There's a lot of pieces to the puzzle that make up the live music venue experience.
But I think one problem a lot of those people are facing, though, is that they're not necessarily employees of any specific venue.
Right. A lot of them are independent contractors.
Yeah. So that PPE is supposed to stay, you know, for employees. I'm sure that I've heard stories of some owners just paying some of their contracted employees anyway, just out of the kindness of our hearts, because it's what they should be doing.
Right.
But, you know, when you're showing, you know, a venue that holds, you know, say 200 people, but all your sound and lighting is contracted, how many bartenders do you have right now working? Zero.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases, you know, so that's it's a tough one to pull off.
So are you overall, hopeful in ways that, you know, that at least that you like venues like yours and, or the one that you work with are going to make it through and that we'll still have some semblance of a live music scene or do you think that, you know, bands are going to, and promoters are going to kind of adapt and start throwing more like renegade parties and just kind of taking over the streets. Cause it's going to happen regardless. You can't hold people back from like having shows and gatherings and, you know, eventually it's going to find a way. So are you, what do you think?
Venues will survive. There's the demand's never going to go away. You know, people are crave that experience and that level of production.
Right.
I would be thrilled to see more parties, you know, just people, street festivals and whatnot happen. That would be great. That's great for every community. Mm-hmm. And we are going to lose venues too. But hopefully this opens the door for people who, you know, there's a lot of people who've been wanting to run a venue, wanting to be in the business, that do know what they're doing and just have never had that opportunity. And if there's one thing that this is causing, it's making it easier to get into it when we do open up again. Rents aren't going to be the same.
Yeah.
So a lot of the prohibitive costs that may have kept some people out of it before may not be as big of a hindrance anymore. I would hope.
Yeah. I mean, and that's also something that would happen at a city level with, you know, some of their easing off on, you know, certain permits and regulations or costs that will encourage venues to stay open for people to swoop in and take the helm. It is really sad though that the people who are kind of like built that dream and were just like hanging on by a thread, you know, just couldn't hang on anymore. And then someone just comes in like ready to go.
Yeah.
But I guess that's just the way of the world.
Wow. If you did it right for that long though, you can come back.
Yeah.
You know, you'll be back somewhere.
Yeah, totally.
There's always going to be the need for there's always going to be a need for, you know, people who know what they're doing in this.
That's right. Yeah. Well, cool, man. And for anyone interested in doing a live stream show at Longboards, you can check out howliveinc.com. And is that going to go directly to you, Ben, or?
That goes to all of HowLive services everywhere.
Right.
if the best way is just to email me at production@thelongboardbar.com.
Cool. All right.
Or talk to Robin.
There you go.
He'll get a hold of me.
Straight from the source. You heard it here first. Well, I hope that some people are listening, you know, get to go check that out and get a professional video, audio, live stream going at an actual music venue. it does sound really enticing in ways. It's kind of like, yeah, like almost feel like, you know, I haven't really gotten a hug in so long. So I imagine just getting a hug would feel so good. And I couldn't even, you know, imagine how good it'd feel to be on a stage playing music with people. So, mm-hmm. Well, cool. Thanks for doing what you're doing. Thanks for making some time today to chat.
Yeah, man. No problem. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. And good luck with all that. I can't wait to go check out a band at Longboards in the future when things open up again. I'm just, you know, keep dreaming about that moment. It's going to happen.
Or maybe play a show.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Ben. Benjamin Thompson.
All right, man.
Appreciate you, man. Have
no
a good
problem.
One.
Thank you. You too.
So I'm going to pull some executive strings on this one, and we're going to hear a track that you produced for me back in 2008, 2009. It's called Humble Up. And I believe you're playing the saxophone and keyboards on this one. Anyways, man.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Let it wash you over. Lend a hand to the ones who feel alone. You will see the world come together. If you just let go, you will feel high. Humble up now, humble with me. Humble everybody and you clearly see that it's a big world with opportunity. You got to make sure to never give up the dream. Whoa. Never give up the dream. Sing it, Jethro. Oh.
If you're feeling down and out, can't find what you're searching for, your journey is your destination. So open up that